Breaking down the top NBA draft prospects across the globe, you're listening to the Prospect Podcast with Ethan Piotta and Alex Brown. And welcome back to another edition of the Prospect Podcast. I'm Ethan Piotta, joined again today by Alex Brown at AHB Analytics. Alex, how's it going today?
It's going well, man. How about yourself?
Going pretty well, just, you know, as we were talking about, just kind of getting through it, putting in work throughout the day. And we have three more months to talk about the 2020 NBA draft class. So I'm sure everyone's all extremely hyped up about this. Other class, I think I'd be a little bit more happy.
It is what it is.
It's all right. We'll be talking about Nathan Knight and John Petty Jr. for three more months, their potential impact on teams. So,
all that good stuff.
Again, you're listening to the Prospect Podcast, the best NBA draft podcast. Today we have a pretty exciting episode for you guys. Alex just put out his recent big board. Go check that out on his Twitter. I put out my big board yesterday as well. And we have similarities and differences within our top 20, I'd say. Mostly differences just in terms of like concise positioning. So we're going to run through each of our spots in the top 20 on our big boards and kind of just compare and contrast where we may differ and kind of where we disagree, maybe where we agree. Because I still know I'm making changes biweekly to my board.
Oh, yeah. Me too. Yeah. I'm getting closer and closer, but it's still changing relatively often.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's one of those classes. It's like my second tier from Anthony Edwards starting at four, and I know you have some strong opinions about him, to Poku at 10. I feel like at any given moment, I'm ready to move Poku up.
Swap him and Edwards, buddy.
Right. So I hold myself back a little bit. But yeah, even like someone like Patrick Williams all the way up to five for me, and that's just something that I feel has been long overdue on my boards, and I'm happy about that placement. But, yeah, we're going to get right into this, and then we're going to get to the questions. A lot of good questions that we got. Make sure to submit those every single week when we do record an episode so we can answer them on the show. Probably one of my favorite parts of the show, just being able to interact, kind of with our audience in a way. So starting off at the number one spot, this is the most fundamental difference in our draft boards, I'd say. And it's gone back to episode number two of the Prospect Podcast, where we literally fully debated LaMelo versus Killian. I have LaMelo Ball. Alex, you have Killian. Yes. What's your reasoning there? Just let the – you know, if they haven't heard episode two, briefly recap it right now.
All right. Well, I like Killian more because I have the propensity to value two-way players more. And while LaMelo has some defensive upside and potentially more than Killian, I think Killian is – at his age, you know, he's 18. He has super IQ on both ends. He's shown that he can run an offense in one of the better leagues in the world. He has a developing shot creation package that I know a lot of guys have compared to D'Angelo Russell at times. I'm not sure it's that far yet, but he definitely has a promising creation package. Elite pick and roll vision. I'm all in on Killian Hayes as being a guy that can be an initiator on a really good team. And yeah, that's probably why I'd buy him instead of LaMelo, who I feel is more of an engine. But I'm putting the keys in Killian's hands right now.
Yeah, so at least for me, LaMelo really kind of in that engine spot, like you mentioned, that primary role of a facilitator. I believe that his skill set makes him situation proof, if you know what I mean. Like, I think any situation that LaMelo Ball goes to, as extreme as, say, the New York Knicks, who need that kind of LaMelo Ball, magnet on their roster, or even, you know, the Charlotte Hornets, whatever. I'm first team off my mind that's just kind of middle of the road. I think LaMelo Ball's skill set, from what he's proved throughout his years in professional basketball, throughout what he's proved in all 13 games that I was able to see of him in the NBL this year, he is fully capable and ready from day one to run and facilitate an NBA offense. And I think that's invaluable. I think that it's absolutely insane that at 6'7", he has the playmaking chops that he does. I really don't feel like his handle gets talked about enough because it's
very good.
It's NBA ready and it's tight and it's exactly what you want from your point guard. He does not get ripped very often. And everything he does passing wise, we go back to the Mike Schmitz interview almost every single podcast.
Yeah, I know.
Everything that he does passing wise is off instincts to him. And that is what separates him in a way for me, to the point where I almost on my last board had LaMelo in his own tier and Okongwu and Killian in like a 1.5 kind of range. Because I think he is the one guy in this draft, in my opinion, that has the highest upside as well as potentially a really solid medium outcome upside as well.
Definitely,
And that's what I think is really special about him. I buy the shooting. I've become a lot more comfortable with him as kind of an off-the-ball player on offense. And defensively, there is positives. You mentioned. Where do you believe Killian stacks up against LaMelo defensively?
Well, while LaMelo has better tools, Killian has. And I'd also say LaMelo has better like playmaking on the defensive end when he's engaged. I think Killian's more. I think he's going to be able to defend advanced offensive sets. I think he's going to be able to check POA and play good off-ball defense. He can play, he can defend 1-2. I think he's just the right guy to defend at the POA spot, in my opinion. I think his potential strength gains. I just like what he brings to the table. I think LaMelo has more upside defensively, but the lapses in engagement, you know, falling asleep off the ball, or that's what bothered me. And that's also my propensity to value players that are a little more NBA ready and less of projects. And I think going back to our second podcast, the way I see Ball is I'm not entirely buying the shot yet. I don't entirely buy the defense yet. And I'm not sure I'd want to have an engine on my team that I'm not confident could develop those traits to an elite level.
Right.
But I totally get the argument for him number one. I'm just not all the way there yet. But you know, I could see it either way, to be brutally honest.
Yeah, I mean these are definitely far and away the best two primary potential point guards in this class. Like it's not even a debate. Yeah, it's far and away. And so, and it really comes down to, I personally am kind of on the same wavelength as you, as I would prefer LaMelo, but I don't think you can go wrong between these two guys. And it kind of just depends on where your franchise is headed, what your team needs. I think that's a big chunk of it. But just in terms of 1-2, these guys, as you know, creators, as facilitators, are neck and neck. And it is one of the strong points of this draft, I would say. One of the, you know, the points of this draft that at least gives some hope to this class in total is LaMelo and Killian. And it should be the main storyline come draft night, in my opinion. At least for our community and kind of where we think.
Yeah, definitely between us, it's going to be our favorite. But if you haven't, definitely check out our second podcast where we talk – the entire base like for an hour about this, because it could go on for a long time.
There's a lot of variables, so I mean we're gonna get moving. Number two on our boards, this is where it really starts to kind of just go off. And I know you've kind of kept this. I remember even like back in March when we started working together, you were 1-2 Killian Denny all day. That has not changed for you. So Denny at 2 for you,
it's going up and
Yeko
down.
Kongwu at 2 for me. What makes Denny the second best player in this draft, in your opinion?
So I've been up and down between him and LaMelo. Totally get the LaMelo argument before I, you know, go on. But I love Denny's game. I think one of the biggest knocks on him was his strength a while back. He's bulked quite a bit since then, from what I've seen, he's taken a passion to developing his game and body, which I think is huge. I'm buying his shot. I think his archetype is really rare to get a 6'9 guy that can defend the interior, perimeter, and have guard skills and have playmaking chops. I just think his skill set is so rare in a guy his size that I don't think you can really miss on Denny Avdija. And he's also a really good athlete at 6'9", like really underrated athlete, great straight line speed, needs to get a little more agile, move laterally better. But you can improve that in training. But it's I think he's a really special player.
So Denny, here the thing that holds me back about Denny, at least from putting him out of spotlight too, mm-hmm. is because Okongwu, again, I've been like knowingly high on him as well. Yeah, like he's someone that I've had since the beginning of the college basketball season as, okay, like I definitely think he's going to have a better season than Isaiah Stewart. And so why is Isaiah Stewart ahead of him? And just in terms of what they bring to the table on defense and even on offense, it's night and day in my opinion, because Onyeka is such an underrated short roll passer and just playmaker out of that pick and roll spot.
Perfect modern big.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think that's at least where I differentiate value. Is yes, I think there is a chance that Denny, I really like Denny. The shooting videos, you can never, put
I'm not putting too much stock in those.
Right. You can't put too much stock into it, but it does look a lot better than I even remember watching Denny last year. And just in terms of his off movement shooting and the way his mechanics look, they do look a lot better. So you can say that. Yeah. Obviously, I'd love to see it in a game setting.
Me too.
But Onyeka, at least for me, his archetype is a little bit more valuable in the way that I think he will eventually still become a modern day NBA five, with potential to also slide to the four alongside potentially a kind of playmaking five such as Karl Anthony Towns. I still think Minnesota is the best fit for Onyeka Okongwu, because you can kind of put him at that 5/4, let him do a little bit of the dirty work inside, develop his game, do what he does best as an overall defender, because we know that's kind of where Cat lacks. And really, bring to the table his defensive versatility. And I just think overall his offensive playmaking ability, rebounding, he's got it all. He's a really fun prospect to watch as well. He's super athletic. You wouldn't really expect it when you see his frame, because he's kind of generally a bigger guy, but he jumps out the gym. And he's got super long wingspan. I don't have the numbers on me. But I think like Onyeka, at least for me, is not going to move from two, I don't think, from now until the draft process ends, just because I think his skill set is so much more valuable in terms of what NBA teams need. And that's just where I'm at right now. But I do understand, Denny, like you said, it's rare that you have a guy like him. I think he'll be guarding threes and fours his first day in the NBA.
Yes, he will.
Easily.
Yeah, and he has the upside to defend more than that, in my opinion. Especially once, if he can really work on his lateral quickness and his footwork defensively, he has the athleticism to defend multiple positions. And I think the difference that we have is just our philosophy, I guess, of the archetypes we value. Because I totally value Onyeka's, what his archetype is. I think I just value Denny's more.
Yeah.
I suppose I think he can bring more to a team as far as have a higher usage. He can – and we could go on about that, I guess, that philosophy for a while. But, I think they're both going to be very valuable players. I think Denny's a harder archetype to find.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely love both of those prospects.
Kind of like that Pat Will big wing in a way. And you talk about big wings.
Exactly.
Probably growingly becoming my favorite archetype to evaluate, but also a really tough archetype to evaluate, I think.
Definitely.
When you just talk about big wings, because they can, be so polarizing. But another thing I just want to mention on Okongwu before we move on is I do buy the fact that he will become a floor spacer. And I find it just still it's the thing that keeps me up at night is why did Andy Enfield not have him shooting at USC? I saw this guy shoot all 4 years of his high school career at Chino Hills, throughout AAU, whatever it is. he was willing and able to shoot the three-point shot, obviously not at an extremely high rate, but something that wasn't out of the ordinary for modern-day fives. That was one of my selling points to him going into the year, is that, okay, I think Okongwu is going to be a solid floor spacer. He's undersized, so he's going to need that. And obviously he makes up for that in other areas, but that's something I do buy him not even developing, but just doing more of at the next level, because he was a 77% free throw shooter this year, I think, or 77-76, whatever it was. He has good touch, and he displayed, I think, from his freshman year at Chino Hills to his senior year, he displayed exponential growth in terms of his mechanics, in terms of his base, and just the way that he shot the basketball. So again, just don't understand why he was not shooting the ball at USC this year. It's still a mystery to me. It's something that doesn't get talked about enough, in my opinion. I'm just going to go ahead and
when he comes to FGCU next year.
Right. Why did Coach not have you shooting the ball at all this year?
Former FGCU coach, by the way.
Really?
If you didn't know. Yeah, so that's why they're coming back for opening night. Yep. Fun fact. But anyway, yeah, love Okongwu. Oh, yeah, both Mobes. And Agbon Polo, all those guys. Yeah. It'll be fun. But moving on, I have LaMelo at 3. So I kind of went into what I value there. I could definitely have him at 2. I think there's a strong argument for him at 1. It's just down to my personal philosophy and what I value in players. But he's going to be really productive. He's going to be an awesome playmaker. I just don't know if he can be a winning engine is all.
Yeah, makes sense. And I you've moved up on him. And recently, I remember he was at 6 for you or something like that?
Yeah, for a while. Mostly for the same reason. I wasn't sure if his archetype would win in the NBA. But I've grown makes a little stronger on him.
And I have Killian at 3, so it's just literally flip-flopped in those areas.
Yeah.
And we kind of dove into that. But I kind of same thing as you. I really like Killian Hayes. He shouldn't be anywhere less than number 3 on draft boards. And he's been one of those guys that bounces between 2 and 3 for me bi-weekly. Yeah. So totally moving on, though, because we kind of already covered those guys. Number 4 for you, Devin Vassell, Florida State. Big fan of his game. Number 4 for myself, I have Anthony Edwards, who I know you have some strong opinions on, but let's get into Vassell. What puts him at number 4?
Again, I think what he brings to the table is really rare. I think you get a guy at 6'7 that can score at all 3 levels, that can play excellent team defense, super high IQ, great athleticism. I'm not sure I buy his shot creation yet. I think there's upside there, but he doesn't generate a lot of space, which I find typically space generators have more success as a shot creators, of course. I'm not all the way there on Vassell, but I just think what he brings as a 6'7 guard wing that can defend as well as he does, check multiple positions, play awesome team defense is really valuable. And I have, if anyone has followed me for a couple of years, know that I place a lot of value in those two-way guys. I think they can. Every team needs them, and I think they contribute to winning so much. And that's what I think is so valuable about Devin Vassell.
Yeah, guys that aren't liabilities on both ends of the floor, and we can dedicate an entire episode to what kind of archetype we value the most. But I completely agree with you. Is that guy? I think, at least for me, I tend to try to value primary initiators and guys like that, potential engines and pieces like that, a little bit higher than, you know, just general two-way guys. But I think Vassell, you can even make an argument that he's more of just a general two-way guy. I've said it a lot. I see a lot of kind of the role of Robert Covington in his game and the way that he's able to just not be a liability on both ends of the floor. But even he has a much better pull-up shooting package than Roko had and still has, in my opinion. And that's, you know, it's really fun to watch him play. He's an excellent defender. He's so smart in help defense, and he just makes winning plays all the time.
Smart.
He's someone that you can vouch for easily, top 4, top 5 in this draft.
Yeah. Just super high floor. That's another thing I value.
Yeah. It's going to be hard to see him fail in the NBA with the way that he plays the game. So, for me, number 4, Anthony Edwards, Ant-Man. This is a lot of number 1 for guys, and he's so tough to place.
He's really tough.
Because I think if it clicks for him, or if he is to go to the right situation, I pray for Golden State every night for Anthony Edwards, because I just think him developing behind Stephen Clay is so right for his development curve, and kind of just watching how they play the game.
He needs to start in a low usage role.
That's what I'm saying. Is that low usage kind of thing where, you know, he can even come off the bench if Wiggins is still there. And just develop. And then maybe, you know, when that contract year hits, you're like, okay, this is the potential that we see. Because if it does click for him, he very well has the potential to be, you know, number one, number two, when it's all said and done in this class. He's an insane shot maker, and he's insane going to the basket, I think, and he just didn't do enough of it this year at Georgia. Immature. He's never in the right place on defense.
His defense is terrible.
Six clips a game of him just standing around on defense and not doing the right thing. So it's just a matter of I have him at four because in this draft, you might as well. And he's probably someone that I'm generally lower on because I think I'll move him down a little bit more come draft time. But at this point, I'm still buying the fact that if it does all click for Anthony Edwards, if he buys in defensively, because he has really good tools, I think, really good size, 6'5", whatever, 225 that he is, 215. Mm-hmm. If it does click for him, you could be looking at one of the bright points of this draft.
Yeah. And, yeah, that's really the argument is if it's going to click.
Yeah.
And if I watch almost all of his possessions and off-ball defense this year. And
that's horrible. I know,
it was a rough process, man. But,
I'm sorry.
Because I don't think he can be a high-usage guy in a good team. And I'm struggling to see if he can be a supporting guy because he doesn't play well without the ball on either end. And it's just like, you know, I'm just really struggling to buy him being a winning piece. I think he's going to be a guy that's going to go to a lower-end team. He's going to put up high-scoring outputs on low efficiency, and people are going to say, oh, why, you know, he's so good. Why is he not winning? And, you know, it's going to be one of those situations. Yeah, Wiggins, people could argue a LaVine situation.
Yeah, a little bit of LaVine.
Yeah, early LaVine, I should say.
Yeah, because I like LaVine Zach. Now. I think he's definitely made improvements to his game. But I definitely kind of that LaVine-esque just in terms of, you know, a lot of people a few years ago, and rightfully so, LaVine literally had no inclination to play defense, and he's still kind of on the weaker end on that side, but he has made improvements. But he's a terrific shot maker. And another similarity is that they're both really fun to watch going to the rim. I think, you know, he doesn't do well with the ball in his hands when we're talking about Anthony, but he is a really good cutter.
He is a good cutter,
and he just
that's
doesn't
one
do
bright
enough
spot
of it.
Off the ball.
He just doesn't do enough of it, and he kind of will. Okay, ball's not in my hands. Let me go sit in the corner. Let me go stand on the wing. Whatever, you know, and that's just not helpful to a team. So it's more of a mental thing for him. It's all got to click, and I think he has the tools to succeed. But you know, we'll see if he does. So
yeah, I remember after when he did the film session with Mike Schmitz in Maui. Yeah, he was like talking about how committed he was to being a better defender, and I just didn't see that at all. So I just, you know, I'm not sure I buy his commitment to making winning plays and all that as far as being the guy, but that's, you know, that's where I'm sitting on right now.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Number five for me, I think this is where it really starts
this
to fall
is fun.
Is Patrick Williams, number five, big quad lifestyle. That will at number five for me. And you know, I put out a scouting video on him, and I generally like
check it out.
I loved please check it out. I really helped me really helped me out. Thank you, appreciate that. But I generally just have a bias towards FSU guys. I don't know why.
Me too.
it's not even really a bias. I just buy that, you know, they're coming into a great program under one of the best coaches in college basketball in Leonard Hamilton. And they're learning how to play defense the right way and successfully. And you know, you can go back to a guy like Jonathan Isaac. I was super high on him. And he's turning out to be well, to be a solid player in the NBA. And I buy the whole package with Patrick Williams. He's one of the second youngest players in the draft. Great size, insane athlete. And the biggest knock on him is his footwork and kind of, you know, his slow hips, and so it's all just gonna be placement for him. But I think he's got the whole package in terms of you can stick him almost anywhere on offense as a Swiss Army knife. I think he's gonna continue to develop his outside shot. He has great indicators. Was a really solid free throw shooter. You know, displayed tremendous pull up shooting, contested pull up shooting. large volume from outside, not large, but, you know, nice enough volume from outside.
For his usage, yeah.
Right. And so I think, you know, with Patrick Williams, I think it's all going to click. I think he's going to become a 40% three-point shooter. And that's really what I'm buying in terms of, you know, his offensive versatility and also just the ability to get to the rim, slash, he's a smart cutter. And then defensively, you know, the biggest selling point for him is his defensive versatility. I don't think he'll be guarding ones or twos ever in the NBA, but I do buy him developing his footwork, lateral quickness, using his size. He's already a really good defender to be able to guard some of the premier wings in the NBA, like a Jason Tatum, like a Kawhi Leonard, whoever you want to say, right? Like, and there's a gap between those two, but being able to guard threes and fours is going to be his MO, and even being deployed as a small ball center is an option for him. And I just think he's extremely versatile, extremely young, and he's got a long way to grow, but he's on the right curve. That's what puts him at five for me.
I respect that. And he's still more of an upside pick for me as far as, you know, because he's still very young. I think he'll be 18 on what would have been draft night, but his potential versatility is intriguing. I do think he has to develop what you said about his lateral quickness and his footwork and definitely his hips. But I think he's going to be an effective player in a low usage role.
Yep.
And five for me is Tyrese Haliburton. And I've moved off Hallie. Is I'm not sold on him as a primary. I kind of used to think about it, but now I'm kind of – I think he's just going to be really valuable as an off guard that can be a secondary initiator at a pick and roll, make winning plays defensively. He's you know, he really showcased that he can shoot this year, I thought. And even though he has a funky form, it's not something to be biased against. I think right. Despite what I see a lot of people saying about he can't shoot pull-ups, he's, you know, not going to be in that situation. He has shown flashes off the dribble, not something I would want him to do, but
yeah,
he's a little more skilled than even some people think. And he's just, you know, crazy smart basketball player on both ends, tons of winning plays. I think the value he provides as either a role, like a top role player or a glue guy starter, is going to be valuable enough to put him in the top five for me. And I debated Okongwu being here as well. And I could totally go for that as well. I just, I think his IQ and skill set is really rare. And I think he'll have a pretty solid impact at the NBA level.
Yeah. And all great points. And Haliburton's another really interesting prospect, as most people are in this class. But, you know, my knock on him is that I really just worry about him being drafted, say, top five and going to a team where he has to assume a high usage role, because I really mm-hmm. don't think that maximizes his value whatsoever.
I think there was that'd be bad scouting if they did put him in a high yeah. usage role, because they yeah. gave him the reins this year and he wasn't a high usage player comparatively. So, like, where another guy would have been, you know, for instance, like Lonzo. But I think he's going to excel in that low-usage off-ball role and as a secondary initiator. I don't think he's going to be expected to create a lot, so the burst and kind of lacking pull-up don't really bother me that much. I just, you know, he needs to strengthen up, get to the rim easier, initiate at a pick-and-roll. But he's going to be a Swiss Army knife if you can use his skill set correctly.
Agreed. That's a good way to put it, because he's kind of a jack of all trades, master of maybe none except basketball IQ, just in terms of a mental from a mental standpoint. Kind of just does everything well in a way, and he knows that he's gonna have to add to his frame. My just worst nightmare for Hallie is that he goes to a team like the Knicks, or he goes to a team like the Charlotte Hornets on draft night, because that's just not going to turn out well for him. And I really hope that he does go to a team that will put him in a place to succeed, because then his return value will be a lot higher. And there's even that thing. Yeah. And there was even that thing that's the reason is that I don't value that as much, because I just think it's a little bit more situation proof for him, as opposed to where I have Patrick Williams, to where I think
I get that
he can develop. But you know, I don't know if you saw that. I don't know how much stock we're putting in this because the Warriors are absolutely interested in everyone in this draft, and they're just going to trade back anyways. But Halliburton is a reportedly ahead of LaMelo and Killian Hayes on the Warriors draft board. And I like that a lot for Tyrese Halliburton. And so, like, we'll see. You know, probably not going to happen, but, like, I would love him in a Golden State role where he maybe comes off the bench. Maybe he's a third guard alongside Stephen Clay. That maximizes his value. That's a situation.
Exactly. And that's a situation I'm hoping that some NBA team maximizes, because if you can get him in that role, he's going to be so effective. It's going to be ridiculous. And that's what I like about him. But you're right. His role was not as versatile when you talk about role maximization. I totally get that argument.
Which is another extremely interesting talking point that I'm sure we can get into, which is kind of role maximization and draft philosophy and whatnot. Six for me, Kira Lewis Jr. Been super high on Kira for pretty much the entire draft process. As soon as the season ended, I kind of dove back into his film and I was like, there's no way he's ending outside the top 10. He's number six for me right now. I think he's the next best point guard in this class after LaMelo and Killian Hayes. And I could talk about him all day, but, you know, his speed is the precedent for his entire game. He's an insane pick and roll player, tremendous vision out of the pick and roll, sophomore, still 19 years old. I buy his pull-up shooting at the next level. I think it's going to translate. I think at the very least, you're looking at a guy who's going to be a premier sixth man in the NBA, extremely valuable. And that's why I stick him at six, is because I just think that that's his floor. That's what I'm sold on for his floor, is a premier sixth man in the NBA. Mm. And I don't think his ceiling is extremely high because he is functionally kind of limited with his strength and his size and just his overall, I would say, offensive skill set. But
He doesn't have like an elite vision. You know, he has good vision, but it's not elite. And so he couldn't really be an engine, in my opinion, at his size without the Ja Morant, Trae Young kind of vision, in my opinion.
I agree with that. And I think he's – I wouldn't say his elite vision, like you're saying, but – like you're arguing that he doesn't. But I would say he's vision. Yeah, I would say he's probably one or two ticks off, because he's – I think he sees the floor really well, especially out of the pick and roll. You know, he's able to kind of manipulate that tag guy, manipulate the off-ball defender, and he various times this season he was getting wide open threes for guys like John Petty in the corner, which is probably why he shot 44%. I think he's a guy that's going to make players around him better, but also provide at the very least a really nice scoring punch off the bench. And he's not that much of a liability on defense other than his size. So that's why I have Kira at six.
Gotcha. Well, I can roll with that. I have Okongwu at six for kind of the reasons we talked about earlier. So I'm not going to dive too far into that. I think he's going to be a really effective player in his role. I just don't have as much value on his role as I do on some other guys like Avdija. But he's going to be a really good, really productive player.
Yep. Yeah. Seven for me is Devin Vassell. And seven for you is Anthony Edwards. And we literally just had that conversation a few minutes ago at number four. Those are each our fourth and seventh ranked players, respectively. So number eight, though, moving on to there, Tyrese Maxey, I have at eight. And this is probably our biggest disagreement, I would say, in the top 10. I'm looking at it because you have Maxey at 25. And I'm not there. I know there's some people that are just all sold on Maxey and they have him first top tier, top five. No, I can't really see that, and I can't get down with, you know, a top five for Maxey. He's probably going to be around 8 to 10 for me, but I do buy him to an extent. He's someone that I flip-flop with Kira a lot, because I do think that Maxey's skill set, offensive versatility, put out a video on his shooting indicators, which I'm really high on. I do think he will translate to be a better three-point shooter than 28% like he was at Kentucky this year. And he locks in on defense. I think that's something a lot of people don't realize about him. I could go on and on. But I think, you know, at the very least, this is another guy that you're going to get strong scoring punch off the bench. A little bit undersized. Won't ever be a primary, creator, in my opinion. But could be a solid secondary and part-time primary if his skill set is maximized. And that's kind of why I have Maxey at eight. I'd like to hear why. I kind of already know, but I'd like to hear where you have him at 25.
I'd like to say it because I've looked at him actually a lot. I watched a lot of his games. He definitely has a strong skill set, but I don't see an undersized guard that's not a primary. Just really being, you know, I just can't buy him in a higher usage role as much as some other guys can. He's great getting to the basket. He's great defending. You know, he has positive shooting indicators despite his lacking production. But I just think he's kind of a scorer, secondary playmaker. I just think his role would be maximized in so few situations. You know, I think it'd be like the Philly situation, the Giannis, you know, alongside a Helio or a big wing initiator. And I kind of have the same argument for Terry. I just think he's going to be a lot better in that role. I just don't think he's going to be as valuable if he can't be a primary. And but, you know, he could surprise me. I love his intangibles. If he can really shoot the ball, I think he's going to have some more value than I project. But I'm just tentatively low because I'm not sure how well of a fit he's going to have. And, you know, that's just my personal opinion. I know he's very polarizing. Some guys have him second round. But he has his good qualities. He's just not a top 20 guy for me right now. Mm-hmm. And that's just where I'm sitting.
Makes sense. There are concerns about it, and I totally get those concerns. I just think that his skill set, his intangibles, kind of like you mentioned, everything that's pointed to him being a really high character guy, displayed some of that clutch gene even at Kentucky this season, makes winning plays. You know, that's my thing. That's what I'm going to turn that into my motto, is that, you know, if you make winning plays, you're just going to move up my draft board, or if you have big quads. So I think Tyrese and Maxey, not Halliburton, Tyrese Maxey is just a tremendously high character guy from what I've seen. That is part of the battle. And then I just think he does everything well in a way. He doesn't have an elite skill. Maybe you could argue his finishing, but will it translate to the NBA? Will he be able to kind of pull off the acrobatics that he did? We'll see. I'm kind of settled with him at 8 through 10, but I totally get, you know, like you mentioned, there's guys that have him in the second round, and you have him at 25, and I understand the concerns there.
Yeah. It's part of my just, you know, my view of the value of his archetype and his skill set overall, but he's definitely a strong player. If he was available in the 20s, I'd snatch him. But, he's just not perfect enough for me to get into the top 20 right now. Yep. But I could see the argument. Totally see it.
And then you have Okoro at 8.
Yeah, I was just about to say, I got Isaac Okoro at 8, one of the best on-ball defenders. Probably he's a defensive genius. Really needs to develop his shot, but he's a top-tier athlete, decent playmaking chops with pretty great flashes. Just really, really mature. He's going to be a contributor from day one on the defensive end. Not going to be a big offensive threat. I think he's going to have that Marcus Smart kind of impact. And, you know, it's really just betting on developing his shot. But he has a higher upside than some of these defensive specialists like Smart and, you know, Thibault, even as far as the offensive end.
Far enough.
So that's what puts him above those guys as far as projecting his potential impact. You know, he's just a consummate pro, awesome defender, just my type of player. I'm pretty happy with him in top 10.
Yeah, can totally understand top 10 for him. And I just want to – you pretty much hit on it. You know, his playmaking ability is so underrated and something that – is going to be extremely valuable in his role. I think he's going to surprise a lot of people at the next level. And it really just does come down. Yeah. It just does come down to that swing skill of his shot. If I saw Isaac Okoro shooting 37%, 35% with good indicators this year on high volume, whatever it is, he's top four. He's probably joining the first tier, I would say, with Killian and those guys, and maybe the second tier he'll be in there, but at least for now, I have him at 12. But it is, you know, he is someone that I'm definitely rooting for, because you're right, he's my type of player in the way that he plays basketball. He's super hard-nosed on defense. And even just physical developments he's made to himself over the years are actually pretty insane. Going back to 2018 when he played with the U.S. team, I'm watching that game with – I mentioned I was watching Roker Practicing today with Croatia, and I was watching the USA-Croatia game, and Okoro is just a completely different player in the way that he looks, and it's insane. Like, he's made such advanced physical developments to his body.
He's a worker.
Yeah, and so that's definitely something that you can buy with him, and I can easily get down with him top 10. So I know people have started to fall on him.
Yeah, just more. Yeah, that was bound to happen eventually after you got really pushed up to top 5 for a lot of people. Yeah. I know Schmitz said he was top 3 at one point. So
yeah,
but I think he's going to be very valuable. Who do you have at 9?
I got Denny Avdija at 9. Kind of already mentioned my thoughts on Denny. Yeah. I'm comfortable with him in that area. Again, someone that I've had as high as like 5 and as low as 10 or 11, but I'm pretty confident that he'll end around the 7 to 9 range. And you have Jalen Smith at 9. I know we've both been pretty big fans of Jalen Smith, but you made the jump on this one. You put him at 9. What puts him at 9 overall for you?
I think value of his role and skill set is going to be really prevalent early on. You know, he's a high motor guy. He can rebound. He can block shots. He can hit 3-pointers. He can play finish. He can do just about anything you want in a utility big. And the main thing he needs to develop is his lower body, both technically and physically. He needs to get his footwork down. He needs to work on his lateral quickness. He takes extra steps. And he needs to strengthen up those sticks, man. It's kind of hilarious, but he's been on quite a bulk diet. So, you know, I'm buying his work ethic. I'm buying his intangibles. I'm buying his impact. I think, not to compare him, but as far as the archetype, you know, he's going to be in that same kind of lower tier version of Jaren Jackson and Serge Ibaka as far as, you know, they can hit the 3, they can play defense, they can finish plays, they can be plus athletes. You know, that's what I'm valuing in Jalen Smith. And he just made major strides from last year as the number one big at Maryland. And I'm a huge fan after watching almost every single possession of his. He does have his things he needs to develop, but I think he's going to be a really effective utility big off the bench or in a starting lineup.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I completely agree with that. I think, you know, he's, like you said, he kind of just does a little bit of everything. And he's made such massive strides in his weight gaining. And you know, even when you saw him last year, kind of almost shadowing in a way to Bruno Fernando, and then just taking the reins of that Maryland front court this year, can shoot from outside. I mean, he's someone that has moved up and down for me. And I feel like that's said about every single guy, so I'm sorry. But
it's going to be like that.
So, you know, with Jalen, though, the thing that does worry me is his lateral quickness. He is kind of stiff in a way occasionally.
Yeah, you're right.
And he makes up for it. He's a smart defender from what I've seen. And he's pretty insanely athletic, I would say, just with his body type. So, I mean, we'll see. I like him at 9. That's a strong statement from you, Alex, because I know you've been high on Jalen.
I'm just buying his development there. And I think most of the lateral quickness is technical and can be fixed or masked a little bit. So it'll be interesting to see how he develops there, because he could be a really versatile defender if they fix these little issues he has.
Right.
So don't sleep on Jalen Smith.
Yeah. I don't want to see him outside of anyone's top 30. So I think that's a crime.
Would be bad.
Like, you just can't. 25. I've seen him out of top 30s too, and it's just like I don't understand. Like he is NBA ready in its own. Like he is. I have him better than. I think he's better than Wiseman right now. I think he'll offer more than Wiseman.
I think he's better than Wiseman and Toppin first.
Yeah. And we can,
that's
we can,
my hot take.
I know we're going to,
that's my hot take.
Right. And I know we'll get into, I think our next episode will be just on street bigs on this class. So we'll get into that a little bit more.
Let's go.
And I think evaluating bigs is probably the easiest. So I'm pretty set on my rankings.
Yeah. Me too.
Number 10. This is where I draw the
Let's
line.
Let's hear Poku's.
Poku at number 10 for me. And this is just because,
he's 11 for me.
His upside, I love it. His upside is insane, and I say this every time I talk about him, but if it all clicks for Poku, you're looking at, a two-way guy with his size, with his mobility and movement on the perimeter, and playmaking ability and ability to shoot the three and attack the basket, he's got to get a lot better at. But if it all does click for him, you're just looking at a freak of nature. And you drafted him to the Bucks in our last mock draft.
Oh, I know. It was beautiful.
I'd have nightmares. I'd have nightmares if I was any Eastern Conference team having to see Poku and Giannis together, because that's just two things that should not exist.
Yeah. Play Poku with the one.
Just recruit the whole team. So I have Poku at 10, and it's surely off his upside. And I'm still I'm still in the crowd of, yes, I don't know if he gets to his highest possible potential, but I do believe he puts on enough weight. I do believe he makes enough strides in his game, and the maturity will start to click in that he is somewhere between that medium outcome and that high outcome. Yeah, and I think that's going to make him a top 10 player in this class.
Yeah, I was going to put him at 10. I have Kira at 10. I think he's going to be a strong secondary engine, and he has potential to be a starter, spot starter, kind of like what we were talking about earlier. Poku, I really did want to put Poku at 10 because I think his role, and he's basically a 6'11 wing.
Yep.
And I think that's just crazy to think about at his age. I think his skill set is so rare in a guy that size. And it's not just, he's 6'11 and can shoot, or 7 foot and can shoot. Like, he has legit movement shooting. He can run P&R. Like, he has a guard skill set. And I'm not saying
he can run off a screen and knock down a three. Yes.
Like, it's that pretty amazing.
Yeah, his footwork is on point.
Yeah, so I like Poku a lot. I would take him lottery easily. But, I know there's a lot of, a lot of question marks for NBA teams. Especially if they don't get to work him out, he'll slip. But definitely high potential return. If you're looking at potential ROI, that is one of the biggest. So he's at 11 for me, behind Kira.
So I got Poku at 10. Alex got him at 11. At my 11, you already talked about Poku. We talked about Halliburton. And then at 12, I have Okoro. We kind of talked about Okoro as well. So 12 for you, Tyrell Terry.
13 for you.
I think one of our personal favorites. Didn't know how this happened. Didn't know how Tyrell would get higher for you than for me. But take it away on Tyrell.
Okay, so kind of back to the Maxi point. I think as far as a guard that's going to run the one spot but not be your primary, I think Tyrell offers the best value because of his shooting package, his off-ball defense. I think he has the right skill set to be a secondary initiator, an occasional primary. But I want him in a system where he's playing a lot off the ball and developing his skill set and frame. I think his potential return is really high just for a guy at his age with his shooting chops. And I'm a big Tyrell Terry fan. And you kind of got me on him. I'm really surprised I ended up with him one spot higher than you. But I think just as far as the value of his role, it's the same as Maxey's, but I think his skill set is better suited for it. I think they're going to play the same role, but Maxey doesn't have as good of a skill set as Terry does for that role.
Right.
So, yeah, that's kind of my view on Terry. I think he's going to be valuable.
And I have Terry at 13, so I'll just get right into my 13th guy, which is Tyrell. And you kind of hit it on the head with him. And you put out a great question, I think it was last week, about if your point guard is not your primary, what skills are most valuable to you? You kind of just asked, draft Twitter in general, what skills are most valuable to you? The response basically generated what Tyrell Terry is good at. And that's, like you said, off-ball defense, off-movement shooting, and being able to affect the game without the ball in your hands. I don't think he needs the ball in his hands at all.
He doesn't.
To affect the game, because he's going to offer enough shooting gravity that teams will have to pay attention to him. He will be an adequate floor spacer for sure. He can shoot the ball in pretty much every single way that you'd want him, off-movement, off-dribble, whatever. And he's not the biggest guy, obviously. That's his biggest thing is if you add 20 pounds, if you add 25 pounds to Tyrell Terry, he's a top five guy in this class. And we've mentioned this.
That's doable.
Right. But and it is. And that's kind of what you got to buy with him is, I've toyed with the idea of putting him in my top seven, top five, just because it is doable to add on to 25 pounds. And then he just becomes so much more valuable as an on-ball defender. He's already got the smarts defensively as an off-ball defender. I love that you mentioned that, because that's something that doesn't get talked about with him. I don't think enough is how strong of an off-ball defender. He's always in the right place, understands rotations really well. And I think he is a really safe, not necessarily safe, but should be a lottery pick just based off that upside alone. Because his one weakness is his frame, really, when you look at it.
Yeah, that's kind of his only weakness, in my opinion. Yeah. For his role, that's why he's so much higher than Maxey for me. But yeah, big Tyrell Terry fan.
Yep, and then at 13, you have Patrick Williams. Pat Will, I'd like to hear your stance on him.
So not as high as you are on him. I'm not all the way there in his current versatility on the defensive end. I think he's going to be a one position initially. I think he has the upside to do a lot more. But, I guess I kind of value him on his medium outcome. Where I think you're buying he gets closer to his higher outcome. I think he provides value as a rotating rim protector that gives him potential as a small ball five. I think his shooting and pick and pop game is going to be effective. I don't really buy his creation package yet, but I think he could be a great modern four, slide in kind of anywhere.
Yeah.
I'm just not quite as I'm just not buying his development as far as you are.
Mm-hmm.
But I still think he's going to be a valuable player. I mean, most NBA teams, from what I've heard, have him, 14 to 18 on their board. So, being a little higher than consensus is fine with me.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it kind of just all comes down to what you buy with Pat Will, because he's displayed, I think, a base that you can go off that, I don't think you can necessarily have him out of your first round. Based off what he showed at Florida State. I'm just talking in general. He's someone that should be like 15 basis, maybe like 18, like you said. And then you kind of just move up on him in terms of ranking from there. The more and more you're able to buy his potential, or if you do buy his potential. So makes sense. And we're going to go one more here, 14, just to round out our lottery. And then we'll just basically list off our last six, because we have gone a long time on 14 guys, and it's good, because we have, this is an interesting draft in terms of, people are so split on consensus of lottery picks and second round picks. And there's some people that have, Emmanuel Quickley better than Tyrese Maxey. And then there's, to each his own. Like, if you have your reasoning for it, you've watched the tape, like, go right ahead. And some people that have LaMelo Ball, out of their top six, whatever. So it's good to get differing perspectives, and definitely become a little bit more knowledgeable on, why we have what we have where. So 14 for you is the big man, James Wiseman. Everyone who isn't kind of a part of or not, fully immersed into draft Twitter sees a board like ours that says, okay, Wiseman 23 for me, Wiseman 14 for you. Why is Wiseman this low? I think we kind of have already discussed this, but why is Wiseman 14 for you?
Yeah, I can explain it pretty I think a lot of people look at what he isn't, as far as, I think a lot of the media is like, wants him to be a cat, him to be a high usage center. And he's not going to be a high usage center. I think for a guy at 7 foot, 7 foot one with a 7'6", 7'5" wingspan, to protect the rim and finish plays at a high level, I think that still has a lot of value. And he has traits to build upon. Can't really buy his intangibles. His IQ is so I kind of want him in that Mitchell Robinson role of protecting the rim, finishing plays, maybe at a higher usage, but I still think that's valuable. I just don't buy him as a star. That's kind of where I'm at right now for Wiseman. I think he's the best play finisher other than Okongwu.
Yeah.
Between him and Najee and, maybe top him, I would say, he's right up there for me. But he has a lot of weaknesses.
He sure does. Yeah, he does.
And his footwork is not great. I think he's an overrated athlete, but I think at his size and length, he's going to provide a lot of good finishing and rim protection, and that's valuable.
Right, and just as a rim runner, rim protector, whatever, I still have questions about his rim protection, to be honest, because I think he's a horrible consecutive jumper, and I don't think his low time is slow, in my opinion, and he leaves the ground way too often instead of just literally using his 7-1 frame and his wingspan kind of just, you know, walling up. But
I agree.
With Wiseman, you know, it bothers me, like, if he was to go to a team like Golden State, like top three, like, man, like, you're literally like DeMarcus Cousining part two. Like he's going to get – like, there's just no impact for him, in, like, on a playoff team, right? And I
yeah, think unless he's actually a play finisher.
Yeah, I think actually a solid comparison, and, like, obviously we don't get into comparisons, but kind of that JaVale McGee role. And his skill set is honestly, like, similar in my opinion. Right, it's and similar, I don't think that's the worst thing. Like, okay, you're comparing JaVale, you know, James Wiseman to JaVale McGee. Yeah. Like, people are going to call that a war crime. But, like, when you look at it, like, you know, both play finishers, run the floor well. And
elite length.
Rim protector. Yeah, right. And kind of just, you know, uncoordinated freaks. So I think Wiseman offers the best value in that kind of role. And for that reason, I want to take JaVale McGee top three. Or top one or top two.
Well said.
So
well
that's
said.
That's why I kind of have him at 23 right now.
Yeah, and I totally get that. I was there a while ago. I had him at 28 for a while. And I was like, I should probably look at him in a different light. But
I'm sure I'll move up on him a little bit more. I was looking for ways to move him up in my last board when I was kind of all putting it together at the very end. And I was just like, well, I don't want to put him over Jalen Smith because I don't think he offers enough, you know,
agreed,
more than Jalen Smith. So I kept him at 23. And
respect it.
We'll see how it changes. Sure. But 14 for me, rounding out the lottery before we just list off our remaining guys, Grant Riller. And I've kind of another guy I've been super high on, and something that, you know, it's something that's going to be an interesting experiment, but kind of just test value in a way for me, because he's 23 years old. He's on one of the oldest players in the class, but I mean, you're looking at a guy though that is just an insane space shot creator, adequate defender, probably one of the best scorers and just overall, you know, shot creators that I've seen in college basketball. Definitely one of the best this year. I think at 14, if he goes to a borderline playoff team, maybe like Miami or something like that, or, you know, some other team, you're going to get tremendous value out of a guy like Grant Riller. And that's kind of why I just stick him at 14 right now. It's because I think his space creation, shot creation package is extremely valuable for any team in the NBA.
All right. So who do you have moving on for your final five?
So I'll round out my last five. 15, I got six. Xavier Tillman. Six. Xavier Tillman from Michigan State. Super high on his maturity. Cole Anthony at 16 for me. Settle with him there. I don't know what I'm going to do with him by the time, you know, the draft's over. Another polarizing guy. 17, Leandro Bolmaro. Super high on his size and defensive. I just think he's really fun to watch as a defender.
He's really great. Yeah.
Obi Toppin at 18, another, you know, guy that you look at our boards and are like, what what is happening here? 19, Desmond Bane for me. Yeah. Obi Toppin's just it. God. 19 for me, Desmond Bane is just, he's a dog, and I don't care what age he is, he should go in the first round. And then 20, RJ Hampton. Rounding it out.
All right. 15 for me, Desmond Bane. Again, kind of same deal as you. I think he's just going to be a really strong impact player. Great versatile skill set. Can do a bit of everything. High level athlete. You know, he's not going to develop a lot more, but he's going to be an impact NBA player. I have Cole Anthony at 16. Very polarizing. Not too sure, again, what I'm going to do with him, but I'm not buying a lot. And I thought about having him lower. 17 for me is Killian Tilly. And a healthy Killian would be in top 14, but his injury questions are ridiculous. But when I watch him, you know, he's laughably good at times. He's just awesome. I love his game. Could be a really good role player on a really good team. Could start on a really good team. He's awesome. Tyler Bay for me at 18 is a lot higher than consensus from what I've seen. I think he's 25 for you. Just elite defender, potentially a low usage starter, but elite defender.
Great winning plays guy.
Winning plays guy, definitely. And good shooting indicators in my opinion.
Yeah.
Josh Green for me at 19, really great POA, needs to develop mm-hmm. finishing versatility and just overall shot making. Then to round it out, 20 would be Zeke Nnaji for me. I think
love it.
Kind of for the same role as James Wiseman, but he's going to be more effective as a floor stretcher, I believe, in time. And his intangibles are awesome. He's a great dude.
Super high skilled, motor.
Super smart, super high motor. Love his game.
Yep. I like Nnaji being in the top 20. Kind of him and Jalen Smith are similar in a way to me in just the way that they could impact a game.
Utility
big guys. Yep.
Yeah.
So that's our top 20. We got a few questions to get through before we wrap it up, and we got some really good questions this week. So let's start it off with the one that I think is one of my favorite things to do just in terms of combining traits from players, because it would never happen, but
we got you.
It does give perspective. Yet, question here from Simon at Hawks Draft Nerd. Great follow on Twitter. Does great NBA draft work. Make sure to check him out. Thanks for the question, Simon. He says, "What trait from one player would you give to another player that would make him your top player in the class? Not something like Marcus Howard shooting to Wiseman, but something semi-realistic." And you said, "I already know this one." So go ahead and start us off here, Alex.
And just to establish, I'm going to avoid, since it's semi-realistic, giving anybody size gains or athletic gains. So I'm just going to go purely off skill. I would love to see LaMelo Ball with Isaac Okoro's defense. I think that would totally make him the number one guy in my class. And I think that would eliminate all the questions I have for him, except for like shooting and stuff. But his value would be so much higher for me. I would love that.
Yeah, this is kind of a random one for me, but I was thinking about it throughout the show, and it wasn't the one I was going to say, but how about Killian Tilly with Xavier Tillman's lack of injury history, or anyone's lack of injury history, because then you're looking at a top 10 guy, and they're kind of similar in the way you could go either, you know, you could go back and forth, Xavier Tillman with Killian Tilly's shooting, you know, off movement, and then that kind of boosts Xavier Tillman's value. So those kind of guys are similar to me. And the biggest thing, as you said, Tilly's extensive injury history, because he is one of the most skilled players in the draft.
Maybe Tyler Bay with Killian Tilly's offensive skill set would be crazy.
That'd be insane as well. And we got some great ones here on the replies from Rafael Barlow, Isaac Okoro with Aaron Nesmith's jumper. Yes, that is realistic.
Stole that one.
It kind of it puts perspective to, you know, if that is to develop, like Okoro moves up boards exponentially.
Yeah.
And another one he said was Precious Achiuwa with Tyrese Halliburton's IQ, which is another nice one. And does make sense because Precious just kind of.
Yeah, he's not the smartest guy. Right. It's all right. Anybody with Okoro's defense or Nesmith shooting is going to be a lot better.
It shows how elite those skills are.
Yeah, that's a really good sign.
Those two guys have. Yeah, right. If you're being mentioned, then you know you're on the right track. This is from Rob at The Sportsman, who's putting our podcast on Dash Radio. Thanks again, Rob, for that, and thanks for the question and the support. Discuss the players and why you are higher or lower on them than others, such as Patrick Williams, Kira Lewis. Poku, I'm assuming that means we're higher, and then Toppin, Avija, or Avdija, etc. Not that I necessarily disagree, but good to hear what you believe. So I think we kind of went over that,
that was kind of the purpose of the show, I think.
Yeah, but I mean, nevertheless, I just think, you know, maximizing value, maximizing role, and it just comes all down to what we value personally. And I know
which
for
is what's
you,
so cool about these.
Yeah, and I know for you, and I know for myself, like I don't value Obi Toppin's defense at all. Like I devalue him a lot because of his defensive side. And we kind of talked about what, you know, separates Avdija. So it's a good question. And I think it just all comes down to what we place value on.
Yes. Well said.
This one's from Koozie. Does my excellent international work at Koozie KG. Who is your pick, Denny Avdija or Usman Garuba, and why?
Oh, jeez.
This one's easy for me.
I want to cop out, but
this one's easy for me. It's Usman.
Yeah, Usman.
I've said to you that he's starting off the year top four for me for next year in a loaded class.
Yeah, he's in my top five.
I love what he brings to the table, and I think
he's so unique.
Yeah, I take him top three in this draft. I think I would.
Yeah, he's so unique, so smart. I think his archetype is super rare. You know, I'd hate to cop out, but I love them both. I think Usman is probably a rare find. So yeah. I'd probably go Usman, but I love Denny Avdija, so picking against him is really hard for me. So thanks, Koozie.
Thanks for the question, Koozie. And then this is from Thanos Hoops. Favorite international prospect in the next 2 years? It's actually a really
good
question.
Next 2 years.
So I'm assuming that means this year in 2021.
Oh, I thought 21 and 22, I would imagine.
Oh, we could do 21 and 22 also.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yep.
Well, I like a lot of it. I think the international class is looking really good. I wanted to say 22 because Gene Montero is awesome. He's a Dominican Republic, I believe. Awesome scoring package. Awesome scoring package. He's really great. Good POA. Just really, really strong prospect. If he can grow a little more, I'd be really happy. So he's a 22 guy I really like. Adam Bona out of Turkey. Well, he's from Nigeria, I believe, but he's in the Turkish BSL now. He's an 03 guy. Super athletic. He's one of the craziest athletes I've seen for overseas guys. So and of course Garuba is probably our number one.
I was just gonna mention Yeah, easily. Perkachin's fun. He's I watched a lot of him today, actually. He's just like a 6'8 guy that has extremely tight handle and has just gotten a lot better over the last few years. And watching, when I see prospects for the first time, I like to look at, their starting product and their kind of ending product. So I watched him U16 first, and then watched him this year. And there's definitely development that comes with him. I think he warrants a lottery pick in next year's draft at this point. That's where I'm at.
He's
with him.
Top 20 for me right now. I need to watch more, so I'm tentatively low right now. But I love Perkachin. He's pretty fun.
And I think you were mentioning. Usman Dang, but Jang. But I mean, France has just such an insane basketball future.
Oh my god!
I think 7 foot Schnitzel is a guy that I've been reading some of his work, and he put out a thing on France's basketball future. And
Matthew
that was
Strasl.
I was just gonna mention Strasl because he's fun.
Or,
Johan Bergeron is fun, and I mean that and even you talk about guys like Killian Tilly and Sekou Doumbia that are in the NBA. France is we didn't even mention Killian, but and Malin, you can kind of just
They have a great future in basketball. I think they're doing a great job over there.
Yeah. And they have Strasl.
Two guys, I believe, too, if I remember properly. Let me double check. Jang. Usman Jang is probably one of the guys. I also like Matteo Spagnolo. There's a bunch of interesting international guys, honestly. I think that the game is becoming more and more decentralized. For talent, it's coming from everywhere. Good. It's really, really cool to see. Big fan of it.
Good, because international basketball is a little bit more fun to watch than Syracuse's zone. So, so I think it's kind of like that trend. But last question here, Kira Lewis Pro Comp. Off the top of my head, I it's kind of basic, but I kind of like Lou Williams for him. Just in the term, and maybe it's tough because I think he's a better passer and he's a better facilitator than Lou Will is. But kind of just that scoring punch off the bench is where I expect him to kind of be at, maybe slightly above that, maybe, at that six-man rule. And that's the first thing that comes to mind is, a Lou Will. Maybe, a poor man's John Wall in terms of, end-to-end speed and just, overall offensive versatility, I guess. That's kind of just what comes to mind with me with Kira, but I mean, I'm super high on him anyway. I don't think he has to justify a comp.
Yeah, I would say, like, broke man's De'Aaron Fox.
That's a good one.
Maybe not broke man, but like, you know, relies on, maybe poor man, slightly, you know, that was a little harsh maybe, but, you know, definitely going to rely on his speed and, I don't think he has these near Fox's level at all, but yeah, I think he's going to be able to shoot. I think he's going to be able to, you know, play, make at a decent level. I think he's going to be, you know, a second engine kind of guy, but that's where I'm sitting on him right now. I don't really have a comp ready other than that, I would think, but not really my best thing when scouting, I would say.
Right. I just, because I think every prospect's just so individually unique. I don't know what, like, I'm like on
yeah,
like, it's just totally, like, I don't know.
Yeah, I get it. Totally get it.
One more guy I want to mention real fast for the international prospects, I actually forgot to, is Josh. Is it Josh Giddey or Josh Gidey? Because I watched, sure, one, I of his games. Yeah, watched one of his games. No commentary on it. Yeah, he's part of the NBA Global Academy. Super fun. If he adds to his frame, he's really interesting. And that top three could be really special next year in terms of international guys. The international class next year is actually really deep.
Going to be really good. I like it a lot.
Yep.
Yeah, he's got that lead initiator kind of, you know, great handle. I'd like to see him score a lot more. His shot's a little strange sometimes to me, but, you know, from what I saw, I thought he's got a good chance.
Definitely. And that's pretty much all we have for today on the Prospect Podcast. Got some big things planned. I think, you know, something that could really be interesting for us by the end of this month. But as for now, we'll just be continuously pumping out these podcasts every single week. Make sure to leave us a nice review if you enjoyed, if you got this far. Leave questions for next week. I think that's probably one of my favorite parts of the show, is just being able to answer out of the box questions and whatnot. But thanks again, Alex, for coming on per usual. I think I'm just going to be right back into using this time, at least for now. I'm a little bit on the verge of being burnt out of this 2020 class in a way. Not burnt out, but, like, you know, I need like a week or two of space away from them.
So get on to 21. Just watch Cunningham and treat yourself.
Right. BJ Boston's been a lot more fun to watch than anything that I've seen this year. So
I love BJ Boston. He's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, and next year's gonna be disgusting in terms of draft class. So
it's gonna be so good.
Yes, but stay here with us on the Prospect Podcast. Next week we'll have kind of just a strictly dedicated to the big men in this class, which is definitely an interesting proponent of the 2020 NBA draft class. Definitely. The big guys that, you know, we're generally a lot lower on, and I think we'll kind of be able to explain why in a full hour segment or so. Follow Alex on Twitter at AHB Analytics. Follow me at Ethan Piotta. Follow the Prospect Podcast at Prospect Pod. And we'll be back next week. See ya.
Yep. Thank you.